There was a pause.
I am Artemis, patrolling the main landing, coming up on the safe room. I'm waving at you right now.
Artemis glanced at the landing cameras. Deserted. From every angle. Definitely no waving manservant. He studied the monitors, counting under his breath. There! Every 10 seconds, a slight jump on every screen.
A loop!
He cried, jumping from his chair.
They're feeding us a loop!
Over the speaker, he could hear Butler's pace quickening to a run.
The safe room!
Artemis's stomach dropped into queasy hell. Duped. He, Artemis Fowl, had been duped. Even though he'd known it was coming. Inconceivable. It was arrogance that had done it. His own blinding arrogance. And now the entire plan could collapse around his ears. He switched the walkie-talkie to Juliet's band. It was a pity now that he'd taken the house's intercom offline, but it didn't operate on a secure frequency.
Juliet!
Receiving.
Where are you right now?
In the kitchen, wrecking my nails on this grater.
Leave it, Juliet. Check on the prisoner.
But Artemis, the carrot sticks will dry out.
Leave it, Juliet, shouted Artemis. Drop everything and check on the prisoner.
Juliet obediently dropped everything, including the walkie-talkie. She'd sulk for days now. Never mind. There was no time to worry about a teenage girl's bruised ego. He had more important matters to tend to. Artemis depressed the master switch on the computerized surveillance system. His only chance of purging the loop was a complete reboot. After several agonizing moments of screen snow, the monitors jumped and settled. Things were not as they had seemed only seconds before. There was a grotesque thing in the safe room. It had apparently discovered the secret compartment. Not only that, but it had managed to open the whisper lock. Amazing. Butler had it covered, though. He was sneaking up behind the creature, and any moment now the intruder would find itself nose down in the carpet. Artemis switched his attention to Holly. The elf was back to bed-banging, slamming the frame down over and over again as though she could... It hit Artemis then like a blast from a water cannon. If Holly had somehow smuggled an acorn in here, then 1 square centimeter of ground would be enough. If Juliet left that door open...
Juliet! He shouted into the walkie-talkie. Juliet, don't go in there!
But it was useless. The girl's walkie-talkie lay buzzing on the kitchen floor, and Artemis could only watch helplessly as Butler's sister strode towards the cell door, muttering about carrots.
The safe room!
Exclaimed Butler, quickening his pace. His instinct was to go in all guns blazing, but training took over. Fairy hardware was most definitely superior to his own, and who knew how many barrels were aimed at the other side of that door right now? No, caution was definitely the best part of valor in this particular situation. He placed a palm against the wood, feeling for vibration. Nothing. No machinery, then. Butler curled his fingers around the knob, twisting gently. With his other hand, he drew a Sig Sauer automatic from his shoulder holster. No time to fetch the dart rifle. It would have to be shoot to kill. The door swung open noiselessly, as Butler knew it would, having oiled every hinge in the house himself. Before him was... Well, to be honest, Butler wasn't sure quite what it was. If he didn't know better, that is, at first glance, he could have sworn that the thing resembled nothing more than an enormous quivering... And then the thing exploded, jettisoning an amazing amount of tunnel waste directly at the unfortunate manservant. It was like being battered with 100 sledgehammers simultaneously. Butler was lifted bodily and flung against the wall. And as he lay there... Consciousness slipping away from him, he prayed that Master Artemis hadn't managed to capture the moment on video. Holly was weakening. The bed frame was nearly twice her body weight, and the ridges were tearing cruel welts in her palms. But she couldn't stop now. Not when she was so close. She slammed the post into the concrete again. A cloud of grey dust spiraled around her legs. Any second now, Fowl would tumble to her plan, and she'd get the hypodermic treatment again. But until then... She gritted her teeth against the pane, heaving the bed frame to knee height. Then she saw it. A sliver of brown among the grey. Could it be true? Pain forgotten, Captain Short dropped the bed, sinking quickly to her knees. There was indeed a small patch of earth poking through the cement. Holly fumbled the acorn from her boot, clasping it tightly in bloody fingers.
I return you to the earth, she whispered, worming her fist into the tiny space, and claim the gift that is my right.
Nothing happened for a heartbeat, perhaps two. Then Holly felt the magic rush up her arm like a jolt from an electrified troll fence.
The shock sent her spinning across the room. For a moment, the world swirled in a disconcerting kaleidoscope of colour, but when it settled, Holly was no longer the defeated elf she had been. Right, Master Fowl, she grinned, watching the blue sparks of fairy magic seal her wounds. Let's see what I have to do to get your permission to leave this place.
Drop everything, sulked Juliet. Drop everything and check the prisoner.
She flicked blonde tresses expertly over a shoulder. He must think I'm his maid or something. She hammered on the cell door with the flat of her hand.
I'm coming in now, fairy girl. So if you're doing anything embarrassing, please stop.
Juliet punched the combination into the keypad.
And no, I don't have your vegetables or washed fruit, but it's not my fault. Artemis insisted I come right down.
Juliet stopped talking, because there was nobody listening. She was preaching to an empty room. She waited for her brain to pass on an explanation. Nothing came. Eventually, the notion to take another look filtered down. She took a tentative step into the concrete cube. Nothing. Only a slight shimmering in the shadows. Like a mist. It was probably these stupid glasses. How are you supposed to see anything wearing mirrored sunglasses underground? And they were so 90s, they weren't even retro yet. Juliet glanced guiltily at the monitor. Just a quick peek. What harm could it do? She whipped up the frames, sending her eyeballs spinning around the room. In that instant, a figure materialized before her. Just stepped out of the air. It was Holly. She was smiling.
Oh, it's you. How did you...
The fairy interrupted with a wave of her hand.
Why don't you take off those glasses, Juliet? They really don't suit you.
She's right, thought Juliet.
And what a lovely voice. Like a choir, all on its own. How could you argue with a voice like that? Sure, caveman glasses off. Cool voice, by the way. Do re mi and all that.
Holly decided not to try deciphering Juliet's comments. It was hard enough when the girl was in full control of her brain.
Now, a simple question. No problem.
What a great idea. How many people in the house? Juliet thought. One and one and one.
And another one?
No, Mrs. Fowl wasn't there.
Three,
she said finally. Me and Butler and, of course, Artemis. Mrs. Fowl was here, but she went bye-bye. Then she went bye-bye. Juliet giggled. She'd made a joke. A good one, too. Holly drew a breath to ask for clarification, then thought better of it. A mistake, as it turned out.
Has anyone else been here? Anyone like me?
Juliet chewed her lip.
There was one little man, in a uniform like yours. Not cute, though. Not one bit. Just shouted and smoked a smelly cigar.
Terrible complexion. Red as a tomato. Holly almost smiled. Root had come himself. No doubt the negotiations had been disastrous.
No one else? Not that I know of. If you see that man again, tell him to lay off the red meat. He's just a coronary waiting to happen.
Holly swallowed a grin. Juliet was the only human she knew who was probably more lucid under the mesmer.
Okay, I'll tell him. Now, Juliet, I want you to stay in my room, and no matter what you hear, don't come out.
Juliet frowned.
This room? It's so boring. No TV or anything. Can't I go up to the lounge? No, you have to stay here. Anyway, they've just installed a wall television, cinema size, wrestling, 24 hours a day.
Juliet almost fainted with pleasure. She ran into the cell, gasping as her imagination supplied the pictures. Holly shook her head. Well, she thought, at least one of us is happy. Mulch gave his rear end a shake to dislodge any clumps of earth. If only his mother could see him now spraying mud on the mud people. That was irony. Or something like it. Mulch had never been big on grammar in school. That or poetry. He'd never seen the point. Down the mines, there were only two phrases of any importance. Look, gold, and cave in, everybody out. No hidden meanings there. All rhymes. The dwarf buttoned his bum flap, which had been blasted open by the gale emanating from his nether regions. Time to make a run for it. Whatever hope he'd had of escaping undiscovered had been blown. Literally. Mulch retrieved his earpiece, screwing it firmly into his ear. Well, you never knew. Even the LEP might prove useful.
And when I get my hands on you, convict, you'll wish you'd stay down those mines.
Mulch sighed. Ah, well, nothing new there, then. Clasping the safe's treasure tightly in his fist, the dwarf turned to retrace his steps. To his utter amazement, there was a human entangled in the banisters. Mulch was not one bit surprised that his recyclings had managed to hurl the elephantine mudman several meters through the air. A dwarf gas had been known to cause avalanches in the Alps. What did surprise him was the fact that the man had managed to get so close to him in the first place.
"You're good," said Mulch, wagging a finger at the unconscious bodyguard. "But nobody takes a body blow from Mulch Diggums and stays on their feet."
The mudman stirred, the whites of his eyes showing beneath fluttering lids. Root's voice crackled in the dwarf's ears.
"Get a move on, Mulch Diggums, before that mudman gets up and rearranges your innards. He took out an entire retrieval team, you know."
Mulch swallowed, his bravado suddenly deserting him.
"An entire retrieval team? Maybe I should get back underground, for the good of the mission."
Skipping hurriedly around the groaning bodyguard, Mulch took the steps two at a time. No point in worrying about creaking stairs when you've just sent the intestinal equivalent of Hurricane Hal scurrying around the corridors. He'd almost reached the cellar door when a figure shimmered into focus before him. Mulch recognized it as his arresting officer from the Renaissance Master's smuggling case.
"Carton Short!"
"Mulch, I wasn't expecting to see you." The dwarf shrugged. "Julius had a dirty job. Someone had to do it."
"I get it," said Holly, nodding. "You've already lost your magic. Smart. What did you find out?"
Mulch showed Holly his find.
"This was in his safe."
"A copy of the book!"
gasped Holly.
"No wonder we're in a fix. We were playing into his hands all along."
Mulch opened the cellar door.
"Shall we?"
"I can't. I'm under eyeball orders not to leave the house."
"You magical types and your rituals, you have no idea how liberating it is to be rid of all that mumbo-jumbo."
A series of sharp noises drifted down from the upper landing. It sounded like a troll thrashing around in a crystal emporium.
"We can debate ethics at a later date. Right now, I suggest we make ourselves scarce."
Mulch nodded.
"Agreed. This guy took out an entire retrieval squad, apparently."
Holly paused, half-shielded.
"An entire squad? Fully equipped? I wonder..."
She continued her fade-out, and the last thing to go was her widening grin. Mulch was tempted to hang around. There weren't many things more fun to watch than a heavily armed recon officer going to town on a bunch of unsuspecting humans. By the time Captain Short got through with this foul character, he'd be begging her to get out of his manor. The foul character in question was watching it all from the surveillance room. There was no denying it. Things were not good. Not good at all. But certainly not irredeemable. There was still hope. Artemis catalogued the events of the last few minutes. The manor's security had been compromised. The safe room was in a shambles, blown apart by some sort of fairy flatulence. Butler lay unconscious, possibly paralyzed by the same gaseous anomaly. His hostage was loose in the house, her fairy powers restored to her. There was an unsightly creature in leather chaps burrowing holes beneath the foundations, with no apparent regard for the fairy commandments. And the people had retrieved a copy of the book, one of several copies as it happened, including one on disk in a Swiss vault. Artemis's finger combed an errant strand of dark hair. He would have to dig very deep to uncover the good in this particular scenario. He took several deep breaths, finding his chi, as Butler had taught him. After several moments' contemplation, he realized that these factors meant little to the overall strategies of both sides. Captain Short was still trapped in the manor, and the time stoppage period was running out. Soon the LEP would have no option but to launch their biobomb, and that was when Artemis Fowl would unveil his coup de grâce. Of course, the whole thing depended on Commander Root. If Root was as intellectually challenged as he looked, it was quite possible the entire scheme would collapse around his ears. Artemis hoped fervently that someone on the fairy team had the wit to spot the blunder he'd made during the negotiation session. Mulch unbuttoned his bum flap. Time to suck some dirt, as they said down the mines. The trouble with dwarf tunnels was that they were self-sealing, so that if you had to go back the way you came, there was a whole new burrow to be excavated. Some dwarves retraced their steps exactly, chewing through the less compact and pre-digested dirt. Mulch preferred to dig a fresh tunnel. For some reason, eating the same dirt twice didn't appeal to him. Unhinging his jaw, the dwarf pointed himself torpedo-like through the hole in the floorboards. His heart calmed immediately as the scent of minerals filled his nostrils. Safe. He was safe. Nothing could catch a dwarf underground, not even a scalian rockworm. That was, of course, if he managed to get underground. 10 very powerful fingers gripped Mulch by the ankles. This wasn't the dwarf's day. First Wartface, now this homicidal human. Some people never learn, usually mud people.
Okay,
he mumbled, unhinged jaw flapping uselessly. Not a chance, came the reply. The only way you're leaving this house is in a body bag. Mulch could feel himself being dragged backwards. This human was strong. There weren't many creatures that could dislodge a dwarf with a grip on something. He scrabbled in the dirt, cramming handfuls of wine-impregnated clay into his cavernous mouth. There was only one chance. Come on, you little goblin! Out of there! Goblin? Mulch would have been indignant had he not been busy chewing clay to eject at his enemy. The human stopped talking. Possibly he'd noticed the bum flap. And probably the bum. No doubt what had happened in the safe room was coming back to him. Oh. What would have followed the O is anyone's guess, but I'd be willing to bet that it wouldn't have been "dearie me." As it happened, Butler never had time to finish his expletive because he wisely chose that moment to relinquish his grip. A wise choice indeed, because it coincided with the instant Mulch decided to launch his earthen offensive. A lump of compacted clay sped like a cannonball directly at the spot where Butler's head had been barely a second previously. Had it still occupied that space, the impact would have separated it from Butler's shoulders. An ignoble end for a bodyguard of his caliber. As it was, the soggy missile barely grazed his ear. Nevertheless, the force was sufficient to spin Butler like an ice skater, landing him on his rump for the second time in as many minutes. By the time his vision had settled, the dwarf had disappeared into a maelstrom of churning muck. Butler decided not to attempt pursuit. Dying below ground was not very high on his things-to-do list. But there will be another day, fairy, he thought grimly. And there was to be. But that's another story. Mulch's momentum propelled him underground. He'd gone several meters along the loamy vein before he realized no one was following. Once the taste of earth had settled his heart rate, he decided it was time to implement his escape plan. The dwarf altered his course, chewing his way towards the rabbit warren he'd noted earlier. With any luck, the centaur hadn't run a seismology test on the manor grounds. Or his ruse might be discovered. He'd just have to bank on the fact that they had more important things to worry about than a missing prisoner. There shouldn't be any problem deceiving Julius. But the centaur, he was a smart one. Mulch's internal compass steered him true, and within minutes he could feel the gentle vibrations of the rabbits loping along their tunnels. From here on, timing was crucial, if the illusion was to be effective. He slowed his digging rate, poking the soft clay gently until his fingers breached the tunnel wall. Mulch was careful to look the other way, because whatever he saw would be showing up on the view screen back in LEP HQ. Laying his fingers on the tunnel floor like an upturned spider, Mulch waited. It didn't take long. In seconds, he felt the rhythmic thump of an approaching rabbit. The instant the animal's hind legs brushed the trap, he tightened his powerful digits around its neck. The poor animal never had a chance. Sorry, friend, thought the dwarf. If there was another way... Pulling the rabbit's body through the hole, Mulch rehinged his jaw and began screaming, "Cave in! Cave in! Help! Help!" Now for the tricky bit. With one hand, he agitated the surrounding earth, bringing showers of it crumbling around his own head. With the other hand, he popped the iris cam out of his left eye and slid it into the rabbit's. Given the almost total darkness and the landfall confusion, it should be impossible to spot the switch. "Julius, please help me!"
"Mulch, what's happening? What's your status?"
"What's my status?" thought the dwarf incredulously. Even in times of supposed crisis, the commander couldn't abandon his precious protocol. The dwarf dragged his final scream out, petering off to a gargling rattle. A bit melodramatic, perhaps, but Mulch never could resist theatrics. With a last regretful glance at the dying animal, he unhinged his jaw and finned off to the southeast. Freedom beckoned. Chapter 8. Troll.
Root leaned forward, roaring into the microphone.
Mulch, what's happening? What's your status?
Foley was tapping a keyboard furiously.
We've lost audio. Motion too.
Mulch, talk to me, dammit.
I'm running a scan on his vitals.
Whoa! What? What is it?
His heart's gone crazy. Beating like a rabbit.
A rabbit?
No, wait, it's...
What?
Breathed the commander, terribly afraid that he already knew. Foley leaned back in his chair.
It's stopped. His heartbeat has stopped.
Are you sure?
The monitors don't lie. All vitals can be read through the iris cam. Not a peep. He's gone.
Root couldn't believe it. Mulch Diggums, one of life's constants. Gone. It couldn't be true.
He did it too, you know, Foley. Recovered a copy of the book, no less. And he confirmed Short was alive.
Foley's wide brow creased for an instant.
It's just that...
What?
Said Root, suspicion aroused.
Well, for a moment there, just before the end, his heart rate seemed abnormally fast.
Maybe it was a malfunction.
The centaur was unconvinced.
I doubt it. My bugs don't have bugs.
What other explanation could there be? You still have visuals, don't you?
Yep. Through dead eyes, no doubt about it. Not a spark of electricity in that brain. The camera is running on its own battery.
Well, that's it then. No other explanation.
Foley nodded.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
Unless...
Nah, it's too fantastic. This is Mulch Diggums we're talking about here. Nothing is too fantastic.
Foley opened his mouth to voice his incredible theory, but before he could speak, the shuttle's bay door slid open.
We have him, said a triumphant voice. Yes, agreed a second. Fowl has made a mistake.
Root swiveled on his chair. It was Argon and Cumulus, the so-called behavioral analysts.
Oh, we've finally decided to earn our retainers, have we?
But the professors were not so easily intimidated. United by excitement, Cumulus even had the temerity to wave Root's sarcasm aside. This, more than anything else, made the commander sit up and take notice. Argon brushed past Foley, pressing a laser disc into the console's player. Artemis Fowl's face appeared, as seen through Root's iris cam.
We'll be in touch, said the commander's recorded voice. Don't worry, I'll see myself out.
Fowl's face disappeared momentarily as he rose from his chair. Root lifted his gaze in time for the next chilling statement.
You do that, but remember this. None of your race has permission to enter here while I'm alive.
Argon pressed the pause button triumphantly.
There, you see?
Root's complexion lost any final traces of pallor.
There? There, what do I see?
Cumulus tutted, as one would at a slow child. A mistake, in retrospect. The commander had him by the pointy beard in under a second.
Now, he said, his voice deceptively calm, pretend we're pushed for time here, and just explain it to me without any attitude or comments.
The human said we couldn't enter while he was alive,
squeaked Cumulus.
So?
Argon took up the account.
So, if we can't go in while he's alive,
Root drew a sharp breath.
Then we go in when he's dead.
Cumulus and Argon beamed. Exactly, they said in perfect unison. Root scratched his chin.
I don't know. We're on shaky ground here, legally.
Not at all,
argued Cumulus.
It's elementary grammar. The human specifically stated that entry was forbidden as long as he was alive. That's tantamount to an invitation when he's dead.
The commander wasn't convinced.
The invitation is implied, at best.
No, interrupted Foley. They're right. It's a strong case. Once Fowl is dead, the door is wide open. He said it himself.
Maybe.
Maybe nothing, blurted Foley.
For heaven's sake, Julius, how much more do you need? We have a crisis here, in case you hadn't noticed.
Root nodded slowly.
One, you're right. Two, I'm going to run with it. Three, well done, you two. And four, if you ever call me Julius again, Foley, you'll be eating your own hooves. Now, get me a line to the council. I need to get approval for that gold.
Right away, Commander Root, your worship. Foley grinned, letting the hoof-eating comment slide for Holly's sake.
So we send in the gold, muttered Root, thinking aloud. They send out Holly, we blue rinse the place, and stroll in to reclaim the ransom. Simple.
So simple, it's brilliant, enthused Argon. Quite a coup for our profession, wouldn't you say, Dr. Cumulus?
Cumulus's head was spinning with possibilities.
Lecture tours, book deals? Why, the movie rights alone will be worth a fortune. Let those sociologists stuff this in their collective pipe. Put the kibosh on the deprivation breeds antisocial behavior, Chestnut. This Fowl character has never gone hungry in his life.
There's more than one kind of hunger, noted Argon.
Very true. Hunger to succeed, hunger to dominate, hunger to...
Root snapped.
Get out! Get out before I strangle a pair of you, and if I hear a word of this repeated on an afternoon talk show, I'll know where it came from.
The consultants retreated warily, resolving not to call their agents until they were out of earshot.
I don't know if the council will go for this, admitted Root when they departed. That's a lot of gold.
Foley looked up from the console.
How much, exactly?
The commander slid a piece of paper across the console.
That much.
That is a lot, Foley whistled. A ton.
Small unmarked ingots. 24 carat only.
Well, at least it's a nice round weight. Very comforting. I'll be sure to mention that to the council. Have you got that line yet?
The centaur grunted, a negative grunt. Very cheeky, really, grunting at a superior officer. Root didn't have the energy to discipline him. But he made a mental note. When this is over, Doc Foley's pay for a few decades. He rubbed his eyes exhaustedly. Time lag was beginning to set in. Even though his brain wouldn't let him sleep because he'd been awake when the time stop was initiated, his body was crying out for rest. He rose from the chair, swinging the door wide to let in some air. Stale, time stop air. Not even molecules could escape the time field, much less a human boy. There was activity by the portal. Lots of it. A swarm of troops gathered around a hover cage. Cudgeon stood at the head of the procession, and the entire bunch was heading his way. Root stepped down to meet them.
"What's this?" he inquired, none too pleasantly. "A circus?"
Cudgeon's face was pale, but determined.
"No, Julius, it's the end of the circus."
Root nodded.
"I see. And these are the clowns?"
Foley's head poked through the doorway.
"Pardon me for interrupting your extended circus metaphor, but what the hell is that?"
"Yes, Lieutenant," said Root, nodding at the floating hover cage. "What the hell is that?"
Cudgeon bolstered his courage with a few deep breaths.
"I've taken a leaf from your book, Julius."
"Is that a fact?"
"Yes, it is. You opted to send in a lapsed creature, so now I'm going to."
Root smiled dangerously.
"You don't opt to do anything, Lieutenant, not without my say-so."
Cudgeon took an unconscious step backwards.
"I've been to the council, Julius. I have their full backing."
The commander turned to Foley.
"Is this true?"
"Apparently. It just came through on the outside line. This is Cudgeon's party now. He told the council about the ransom demand and you springing Mr. Diggums. You know what the elders are like when it comes to parting with gold." Root folded his arms.
"People told me about you, Cudgeon. They said you'd stab me in the back. I didn't believe them. I was a fool."
"This is not about us, Julius. It's about the mission. What's inside this cage is our best chance of success."
"So what's in the cage? No, don't tell me. The only other non-magical creature in the lower elements. And the first troll we've managed to take alive in over a century."
"Exactly. The perfect creature to flush out our adversary."
Root's cheeks glowed with the effort of restraining his anger.
I don't believe you're even considering this.
Face it, Julius. It's the same basic idea as yours.
No, it isn't. Mulch Diggums made his own choices. He knew the risks.
Diggums is dead?
Root rubbed his eyes again.
Yes, it would seem so. A cave-in.
Well, that just proves I'm right. A troll won't be so easily dispatched.
It's a dumb animal, for heaven's sake. How can a troll follow instructions?
Cudgeon smiled, newborn confidence peeping through his apprehension.
What instructions? We just pointed at the house and get out of the way. I guarantee you those humans will be begging us to come in and rescue them.
What about my officer?
We'll have the troll back under lock and key long before Captain Short is in any danger.
You can guarantee that, can you?
Cudgeon paused.
Oh, that's a chance I'm willing... the council is willing to take.
Politics, spat Root. This is all politics to you, Cudgeon. A nice feather in your cap on the way to council seat. You make me sick.
Be that as it may, we are proceeding with this strategy. The council have appointed me acting commander, so if you can't put our personal history aside, get the hell out of my way.
Root stepped aside.
Don't worry, commander. I don't want anything to do with this butchery. The credit is all yours.
Cudgeon put on his best sincere face.
Julius, despite what you think, I have only the interests of the people at heart.
One person in particular, snorted Root.
Cudgeon decided to go for the high moral ground.
I don't have to stand here listening to this. Every second talking to you is a second wasted.
Root looked him straight in the eye.
That's about 600 years wasted altogether, eh, friend?
Cudgeon didn't answer. What could he say? Ambition had a price, and that price was friendship. Cudgeon turned to his squad, a group of hand-picked sprites loyal only to him.
Get the hovercage over to the avenue. We don't green light until I give the word.
He brushed past Root, eyes looking anywhere except at his erstwhile friend. Foley wouldn't let him go without a comment.
Hey, Cudgeon.
The acting commander couldn't tolerate that tone, not on his first day.
You watch your mouth, Foley. No one is indispensable.
The centaur chuckled.
Very true. That's the thing about politics. You get one shot.
Cudgeon was semi-interested, in spite of himself.
Well, I know if it was me, continued Foley, and I had one chance, just one chance, to book my behind a seat on that council, I certainly wouldn't entrust my future to a troll.
And suddenly Cudgeon's newfound confidence evaporated, replaced by a shiny pallor. He wiped his brow, hurrying after the departing hovercage.
See you tomorrow, Foley called after him. You'll be taking out my trash.
Root laughed, possibly the first time one of Foley's comments had amused him.
Good man, Foley, he grinned. Hit that backstabber where it hurts, right in the ambition.
Thanks, Julius.
The grin disappeared faster than a deep-fried pit slug in the Lep canteen.
I've warned you about the Julius thing, Foley. Now get that outside line open again. I want that gold ready when Cudgeon's plan goes awry. Lobby all my supporters on the council. I'm pretty sure Lope's one of mine, and Cahate's, possibly Vinyeya. She's always had a thing for me, devilishly attractive as I am.
You're joking, of course.
I never joke, said Root,
and he said it with a straight face. Holly had a plan, of sorts. Sneak around, shielded, reclaim some fairy weaponry, then cause havoc until Fowl was forced to release her. And if several million Irish pounds worth of property damage happened to ensue, well, that was just a bonus. Holly hadn't felt so good in years. Her eyes blazed with power, and there were sparks sizzling below every centimetre of skin. She'd forgotten just how good running hot felt. Captain Short felt in control now, on the hunt. This was what she was trained to do. When this affair had started, the advantage had been with the mud people. But now the boot was on the other foot. She was the hunter, and they were the prey. Holly scaled the great staircase, ever vigilant for the giant manservant. That was one individual she wasn't taking any chances with. If those fingers closed around her skull, she was history, helmet or not. Assuming she managed to find a helmet. The vast house was like a mausoleum, without a single sign of life inside its vaulted rooms. Spooky portraits, though. Each one with foul eyes, suspicious and glittering. Holly determined to torch the lot of them when she recovered her Neutrino 2000.
Vindictive, perhaps, but totally justified considering what Artemis Fowl had put her through. She scaled the steps swiftly, following the curve around to the upper landing. A slot of pale light peeped from under the last door of the corridor. Holly placed her palm against the wood, feeling for vibration. Activity, all right. Shouting and footsteps, thundering this way. Holly jumped back, flattening herself against the velveteen wallpaper. Not a moment too soon. A hulking shape burst through the doorway and hurtled down the corridor, leaving a maelstrom of air currents in his wake.
"Juliet!"
he shouted, his sister's name hanging in the air long after he had disappeared down the stairs. "Don't worry, Butler," thought Holly. "She's having the time of her life, glued to WrestleMania." But the open door presented a welcome opportunity. She slipped through before the mechanical arm could close it again. Artemis Fowl was waiting. Anti-shield filters cobbled onto his sunglasses.
"Good evening, Captain Short,"
he began, confidence apparently intact.
"At the risk of sounding clichéd, I've been expecting you."
Holly didn't respond. Didn't even look her jailer in the eye. Instead, she utilized her training to scan the room, her gaze resting briefly on each surface. "You are, of course, still bound by the promises made earlier tonight." But Holly wasn't listening. She was sprinting towards a stainless steel workbench bolted to the far wall.
"So basically, our situation hasn't changed. You are still my hostage."
"Yeah, yeah, yeah," muttered Holly, running her fingers over the rows of confiscated retrieval equipment. She selected a stealth-coated helmet, slipping it over her pointed ears. The pneumatic pads pumped to cradle her crown. She was safe now. Any further commands given by Fowl meant nothing through the reflective visor. A wire mic slotted down automatically. Contact was immediate.
"On revolving frequencies. Broadcasting on revolving frequencies. Holly, if you can hear me, take cover."
Holly recognized Foley's voice, something familiar in a crazy situation.
"Repeat, take cover. Cudgeon is sending in a..."
"Something I should know," said Artemis.
"Quiet,"
hissed Holly, worried by the tone of Foley's usually flippant voice.
"I say again, they are sending in a troll to secure your release."
Holly started. Cudgeon was calling the shots now. Not good news at all. Fowl interrupted again.
"It's not polite, you know, ignoring your host."
Holly snarled.
"Enough is enough." She pulled back her fist, fingers curled in a tight bunch.
Artemis didn't flinch. Why would he? Butler always intervened before punches landed. But then something caught his eye, a large figure running down the stairway on the first floor monitor. It was Butler.
"That's right, rich boy," said Holly nastily. "You're on your own this time."
And before Artemis's eyes had time to widen, Holly put a few extra kilos of spring in her elbow and whacked her abductor right on the nose.
"Oof,"
he said, collapsing onto his rear end.
"Oh, yes, that felt good."
Holly focused on the voice buzzing in her ear.
"We've been feeding a loop to the outside cameras, so the humans won't see anything coming up the avenue. But it's on the way, trust me. Foley, come in. Holly, is that you?"
"The one and only. Foley, there's no loop. I can see everything that's going on around here."
"A cunning little... He must have rebooted the system."
The avenue was a hive of fairy activity. Cudgeon was there, haughtily directing his team of sprites. And in the centre of the melee stood a 5-metre-tall hover cage floating on a cushion of air. The cage was directly before the manor door, and the techies were securing a concussor seal to the surrounding wall. When activated, several alloy rods in the seal's collar would be detonated simultaneously, effectively disintegrating the door. When the dust settled, the troll would only have one place to go. Into the manor. Holly checked the other monitors. Butler had managed to drag Juliet from the cell. They had ascended from the cellar level and were just crossing the lobby, right in the line of fire.
"Darvet,"
she swore, crossing to the work surface. Artemis was propped on his elbows.
"You hit me,"
he said in disbelief. Holly strapped on a set of hummingbirds.
"That's right, Fowl, and there's plenty more where that came from, so stay right where you are if you know what's good for you."
For once in his life, Artemis realized that he didn't have a snappy answer. He opened his mouth, waiting for his brain to supply the customary pithy comeback, but nothing arrived. Holly slipped the Neutrino 2000 into its holster.
That's right, Mud Boy. Playtime's over. Time for the professionals to take over. If you're a good boy, I'll buy you a lolly when I come back.
And when Holly was long gone, soaring beneath the hallway's ancient oak beams, Artemis said,
I don't like lollipops.
It was a woefully inadequate response, and Artemis was instantly appalled with himself. Pathetic, really. I don't like lollipops. No self-respecting criminal mastermind would be caught dead even using the word lollipops. He really would have to put together a database of witty responses for occasions such as this. It was quite possible that Artemis would have sat like that for some time, totally detached from the situation at hand, had not the front door imploded, shaking the manor to its foundations. A thing like that is enough to knock the daydreams from anyone's head. A sprite alighted before Acting Commander Cudgeon.
The collar's in place, sir.
Cudgeon nodded.
Are you sure it's tight, Captain? I don't want that troll coming out the wrong way.
Tighter than a goblin's wallet. There's not a bubble of air getting through that seal. Tighter than a stinkworm's...
Very well, Captain,
interrupted Cudgeon hurriedly, before the sprite could complete his graphic analogy. Beside them, the hover cage shook violently, almost toppling the container from its air cushion.
We'd better blow that sucker, Commander. If we don't let him out of there soon, my boys are going to spend the next week scraping...
Fine, Captain, fine. Blow it. Blow it, for goodness sake.
Cudgeon hurried behind the blast shield, scribbling a note on his palm-top's LCD screen. Memo. Remind the sprites to watch their language. After all, I am a commander now. The foul-mouthed captain in question turned to the hovercage's cab driver.
Blow her, chicks. Blow the door off its damn hinges.
Yes, sir. Off its damn hinges. That's a roger.
Cudgeon winced. There'd be a general meeting tomorrow, first thing. By then, he'd have the commander's icon on his lapel. Even a sprite might be less likely to curse, with a triple acorn logo winking in his face. Chicks pulled down his shrapnel goggles, even though the cab had a quartz windscreen. The goggles were cool. Girls loved them. Or so the driver thought. In his mind's eye, he saw himself as a grim-faced daredevil. Sprites were like that. Give a fairy a pair of wings, and he thinks he's God's gift to women. But Chick's Verbal's ill-fated quest to impress the dames is, once again, another story. In this particular tale, he serves only one purpose, and that is to melodramatically push the detonate button. Which he does, with great aplomb. 2 dozen controlled charges detonated in their chambers, driving 2 dozen alloy cylinders out of their mounts at over 1,000 miles per hour. Upon impact, each bar pulverized the contact area, plus the surrounding 15 centimeters, effectively blowing the door off its damn hinges, as the captain would say. When the dust settled, the handlers winched back the containment wall inside the cage and began hammering the side panels with the flats of their hands. Cudgeon peeped out from behind the blast shield.
All clear, Captain!
Just a damn second, Commander. Chicks, how are we doing?
Chicks checked the cab's monitor.
He's moving. The hammering is spooking him. The claws are coming out. My, he's a big sucker. I wouldn't want to be that recon babe if she gets in the way of this.
Cudgeon felt a momentary pang of guilt, which he dispelled with his favourite daydream, a vision of himself sinking into a beige velour council seat. The cage heaved violently, almost dislodging Chicks from his seat. He held on like a rodeo rider.
Whoa! He's on the move! Lock and load, boys! I have a feeling that any second we're going to be getting a cry for help!
Cudgeon didn't bother locking and loading. He preferred to leave that sort of thing to the foot soldiers. The acting commander considered himself too important to be risked in an insecure situation. For the good of the people in general, it was better he remain outside the op zone. Butler took the stairs 4 at a time. It was possibly the first time he had ever abandoned Master Artemis in a crisis. But Juliet was family, and there was obviously something seriously wrong with his baby sister. That fairy had said something to her, and now she was just sitting in the cell, giggling. Butler feared the worst. If anything were to happen to Juliet, he didn't know how he'd live with himself. He felt a dribble of sweat slide down the crown of his shaven head. This whole situation was shooting off in bizarre directions. Fairies, magic, and now a hostage loose in the manor. How could he be expected to control things? It took a 4-man team to guard the lowliest politician, but he was expected to contain this impossible situation on his own.
Butler sprinted down the corridor into what had, until recently, been Captain Short's cell. Juliet was sprawled on the cot, enraptured by a concrete wall.
"What are you doing?"
he gasped, drawing the Sig Sauer 9mm with practiced ease. His sister barely spared him a glance.
"Quiet, you big ape. Louis the Love Machine is on."
"He ain't so tough, I could take him."
Butler blinked. She was talking gibberish, obviously drugged.
"Let's go. Artemis wants us upstairs in the Situations Room."
Juliet pointed a manicured finger at the wall.
"Artemis can wait. This is for the Intercontinental title, and it's a grudge match. Louis ate the Hogman's pet piggy."
The manservant studied the wall. It was definitely blank. He didn't have time for this.
"Right, let's go,"
he growled, slinging his sister over a broad shoulder.
"No, you big bully,"
she protested, hammering his back with tiny fists.
"Not now! Hogman! Hogman!"
Butler ignored the objections, settling into a loping run. Who the hell was this Hogman person? One of her boyfriends, no doubt. He was going to keep closer tabs on callers to the lodge in future.
"Butler, pick up!"
It was Artemis, on the handheld. Butler jiggled his sister up a foot so he could reach his belt.
"Lollipops!"
barked his employer.
"Say again? I thought you said... get out of there! Take cover! Take cover!"
Take cover? The military term didn't sound right coming out of Master Artemis's mouth. Like a diamond in a lucky bag.
"Take cover!" "Yes, Butler, cover! I thought speaking in primal terms could be the quickest route to your cognitive functions. Obviously, I was mistaken."
That was more like it. Butler scanned the hall for a nook to duck into. Not much choice. The only shelter was provided by the suits of medieval armour punctuating the walls. The manservant ducked into the alcove behind a 14th century knight complete with lance and mace. Juliet tapped the breastplate.
"You think you're mean? I could take you with one hand.
Quiet!"
hissed Butler. He held his breath and listened. Something was approaching the main door. Something big. Butler leaned out far enough to get one eye on the lobby. Then you could say that the door exploded. But that particular verb doesn't do the action justice. Rather, it shattered into infinitesimal pieces. Butler had seen something like this once before, when a Force 7 earthquake had rippled through a Colombian drug lord's estate, seconds before he had been scheduled to blow it up. This was slightly different. More localized. Very professional. It was classic anti-terrorist tactics. Hit him with smoke and sonics, then go in while the targets were disorientated. Whatever was coming, it would be bad. He was certain of it. He was absolutely right. Dust clouds settled slowly, depositing a pale sheet on the Tunisian rug. Madame Fowle would have been furious if she ever put so much as a toe outside the attic door. Butler's instincts told him to move. Zigzag across the ground floor. Make for the higher ground. Stay low to minimize the target. This would be the perfect time to do it, before visibility cleared. Any second now, a hail of bullets would be whistling through the archway, and the last place he wanted to be was pinned down on a lower level. And on any other day, Butler would have moved. He would have been halfway up the stairway before his brain had time for second thoughts. But today he had his baby sister over his shoulder, spouting gibberish, and the last thing he wanted to do was expose her to murderous assault fire. With Juliet in the state she was in, she'd probably challenge the fairy commandos to a tag wrestling match, and though his sister talked tough, she was just a kid, really. No match for trained military personnel. So Butler hunkered down, propped Juliet against a tapestry behind a suit of armour, and checked his safety catch. Off. Good. Come and gut me, fairy boys. Something moved in the dust haze. It was immediately obvious to Butler that the something wasn't human. The manservant had been on too many safaris not to recognise an animal when he saw it. He studied the creature's gait, possibly simian. Similar upper body structure to an ape, but bigger than any primate Butler had ever seen. If it was an ape, then his handgun wasn't going to be of much use. You could put 5 rounds in the skull of a bull ape and he'd still have time to eat you before his brain realized he was dead. But it wasn't an ape. Apes didn't have night eyes. This creature did. Glowing crimson pupils, half hidden behind shaggy forelocks. Tusks, too, but not elephantine. These were curved, with serrated edges. gutting weapons. Butler felt a tingle low in his stomach. He had had the feeling once before, on his first day at the Swiss Academy. It was fear. The creature stepped clear of the dust haze. Butler gasped, again, his first since the Academy. This was like no adversary he'd ever faced before. The manservant realized instantly what the fairies had done. They had sent in a primal hunter, a creature with no interest in magic or rules, a thing that would simply kill anything in its way, regardless of species. This was the perfect predator. That much was clear from the meat-ripping points on his teeth, from the dried gore crusted beneath its claws, and from the distilled hatred spilling from its eyes. The troll shambled forwards, squinting through the chandelier light. Yellowed claws scraped along the marble tiling, throwing up sparks in their wake. It was sniffling now, snorting curious breaths, head cocked to one side. Butler had seen that pose before, on the snouts of starved pit bulls just before their Russian handlers set them loose on a bear hunt. The shaggy head froze. Its snout pointed directly at Butler's hiding place. It was no coincidence. The manservant peeked out between the chainmail fingers of a gauntlet. Now came the stalk. Once the scent had been acquired, the predator would attempt a low, silent approach before the lightning strike. But apparently the troll had not read the predator's handbook, because it didn't bother with the stealth approach, jumping directly to the lightning strike. Moving faster than Butler would have believed possible, the troll sprang across the lobby, brushing the medieval armor aside as though it were a shop mannequin. Juliet blinked.
"Oh!" she gasped. "It's Bigfoot Bob, Canadian champion 1998. I thought you were in the Andes looking for your relatives."
Butler didn't bother to correct her. His sister wasn't lucid. At least she would die happy. While his brain was contemplating this morbid observation, Butler's gun hand was coming up. He squeezed the trigger as rapidly as the Sig Sauer's mechanism would allow. Two in the chest, three between the eyes. That was the plan. He got the chest shots in, but the troll interfered before Butler could complete the formation. The interference took the form of siding tusks that ducked below Butler's guard. They coiled around his trunk, slicing through his Kevlar-reinforced jacket like a razor through rice paper. Butler felt a cold pain as the serrated ivory pierced his chest. He knew immediately that the wound was fatal. His breath came hard. That was one lung gone, and gouts of blood were matting the troll's fur. His blood. No one could lose that amount and live. Nevertheless, the pain was instantly replaced by a curious euphoria, some form of natural anesthetic injected through channels in the beast's tusks. More dangerous than the deadliest poison. In minutes, Butler would not only stop struggling, but go giggling to his grave. The manservant fought against the narcotics in his system, struggling furiously in the troll's grip. But it was no use. The fight was over almost before it had begun. The troll grunted, flipping the limp human body over his head. Butler's burly frame collided with the wall at a speed human bones were never meant to withstand. The bricks cracked from floor to ceiling. Butler's spine went too. Now, even if the blood loss didn't get him, paralysis would. Juliet was still enthralled by the mesmer.
"Come on, brother, get off the canvas. We all know you're faking."
The troll paused. Some basic curiosity piqued by the lack of fear. He would have suspected a trick, if he could have formulated such a complicated thought. But in the end, appetite won out. This creature smelled flesh. Fresh and tender. Flesh from above ground was different, laced with surface smells. Once you've had open-air meat, it's hard to go back. The troll ran a tongue over his incisors and reached out a shaggy hand. Holly tucked the hummingbirds close to her torso, dropping into a controlled dive. She skimmed the banisters, emerging into the portico below a stained glass dome. The time-stop light filtered unnaturally, splitting into thick azure shafts. Light, thought Holly. The helmet high beams worked before. There was no reason why they wouldn't work again. It was too late for the male. He was a bag of broken bones. But the female? She still had a few seconds left before the troll split her open. Holly spiraled down through the faux light, searching her helmet console for the sonics button. Sonics were generally used on canines, but in this case it might provide a moment's distraction. Enough to get her to ground level. The troll was reaching in towards Juliet underhand. It was a move generally reserved for the defenseless. The claws would curl in below the ribs, rupturing the heart.
Minimum damage to the flesh and no last-minute tension to toughen the meat. Holly activated her sonics. And nothing happened. Not good. Generally, your average troll would be at the very least irritated by the ultra-high frequency tone, but this particular beast didn't even shake his shaggy head. There were a couple of possibilities. One, the helmet was malfunctioning. Two, this troll was deaf as the proverbial post. Unfortunately, Holly had no way of knowing, as the tones were inaudible to fairy ears. Whatever the problem, it forced Holly to adopt a strategy she would rather not have resorted to. Direct contact. All to save a human's life. She'd gone Section 8, without a doubt. Holly jerked the throttle, straight from fourth to reverse. Not very good for the gears. She'd get a dressing down from the mechanics for that, in the unlikely event she actually survived this never-ending nightmare. The effect of this gear crunching was to flip her around in mid-air, so that her boot heels were pointed directly at the troll's head. Holly winced. Two entanglements with the same troll. Unbelievable. Her heels caught the beast square on the crown of its head. At that speed, there was at least half a ton of G-force behind the contact. Only the reinforced ribbing in her suit prevented Holly's leg bones from shattering. Even so, she heard her knee pop. The pain clawed its way to her forehead, ruined her recovery maneuver too. Instead of repelling herself to a safe altitude, Holly crumpled onto the troll's back, becoming instantly entangled in the ropey fur. The troll was suitably annoyed. Not only had something distracted it from dinner, but now that something was nestled in its fur, along with the cleaner slugs. The beast straightened, reaching a clawed hand over its own shoulder. The curved nails raked Holly's helmet, scoring parallel grooves in the alloy. Juliet was safe for the moment, but Holly had taken her place on the endangered individuals list. The troll squeezed tighter, somehow securing a grip on the helmet's anti-friction coating, which, according to Foley, was impossible to grip. Serious words would be had. If not in this life, then definitely the next. Captain Short found herself being hoisted aloft to face her old enemy. Holly struggled to concentrate through the pain and confusion. Her leg was swinging like a pendulum, and the troll's breath was breaking over her face in rancid waves. There had been a plan, hadn't there? Surely she hadn't flown down here just to curl up and die. There must have been a strategy. All those years in the academy must have taught her something. Whatever her plan had been, it floated just out of reach, somewhere between pain and shock. Out of reach.
"The lights, Holly!"
A voice in her head. Probably talking to herself. An out-of-head experience. She must remember to tell Foley about this.
Foley? "Hit the lights, Holly! If those tusks get to work, you'll be dead before the magic can kick in. Foley, is that you?"
Holly may have said this aloud, or she may have just thought it. She wasn't sure.
"The tunnel high beams, Captain."
A different voice, not so cuddly.
"Hit the button now! That's an order!"
Oops. It was Root. She was falling down on the job again. First Hamburg, then Martina Franca, now this.
"Yes, sir,"
she mumbled, trying to sound professional.
"Press it! Now, Captain Short!"
Holly looked the troll straight in its merciless eyes and pressed the button. Very melodramatic. Or it would have been, if the lights had worked. Unfortunately for Holly, in her haste, she'd grabbed one of the helmets cannibalized by Artemis Fowl. Hence, no sonics, no filters, and no tunnel beams. The halogen bulbs were still installed, but the wires had come loose during Artemis's investigations.
"Oh, dear,"
breathed Holly.
"Oh, dear," barked Root. "What's that supposed to mean?"
"The beams are offline," explained Foley.
"Oh."
Root's voice trailed off. What more was there to say? Holly squinted at the troll. If you didn't know trolls were dumb animals, you'd swear the beast was grinning. Standing there with blood dripping from various chest wounds, grinning. Captain Short didn't like being grinned at. "Laugh this off," she said, and butted the troll with the only weapon available to her, her helmeted head. Valiant, undoubtedly, but about as effective as trying to cut down a tree with a feather. Luckily, the ill-advised blow had a side effect. For a split second, two strands of conductor filament connected, sending power flooding to one of the tunnel beams. 400 watts of white light blasted through the troll's crimson eyes, dispatching lightning rods of agony to the brain.